Hi, I'm Tim Peter, and welcome to Search Chat, Solo Segment's podcast dedicated to all things search, AI, and content marketing related. Who is Solo Segment? Well, we're a technology company focused on site search analytics and AI-driven content discovery to improve search results, increase customer satisfaction, and unlock revenue for your company. Solo Segment, make your search smarter. You can learn more at solosegment.com.
On this episode of Search Chat, Solo Segment CEO Steve Zager and I discuss a recent Wall Street Journal article about Google's dominance in the search market. We also discuss how you can put search to work more effectively for your business and make Google less relevant. All that and more on the latest Solo Segment Search Chat, coming at you right about now.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Tim. Thanks. Thanks for accommodating the big changes in schedule. It's good to be talking again.
Likewise. Yeah, this is it's been a while. We had an episode with Mark Schaefer, which was great, right. And I'll put a link to in the show notes. Everyone should check that out. But it's been a fair bit since the last time you and I
feels talked. Feels like forever we sat at a microphone and talked like this as opposed to sitting in a room talking, but you know, okay.
Right, exactly. I haven't talked to you twice today, but I haven't talked to you on a microphone in, what feels like a while. But sure nonetheless, what do you want to talk about today, Steve?
You know how much I love search engine monopolies. So, maybe, a lot going on these days with regards to search, especially that Wall Street Journal article was kind of interesting.
That's a great choice of words. Why do you say interesting, Steve, as opposed to really phenomenal article or, oh my gosh, these people are so smart and know a lot about this stuff?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. In a previous life, I did some writing about a hobby of mine, and I always felt a bit like a pretender because sometimes it forced me to become knowledgeable about something in a very short period of time.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I always kind of felt like I wasn't quite the expert that I might have sounded like, but I learned enough of the buzzwords so that I could be credible. And I feel like that's the depth of journalism with regards to this Wall Street Journal article that was recently published. And certainly we're not going to take them to task on all the facts they got wrong, which was pretty much all of them.
Right. Actually, there's a couple of good articles, which we will link to in the show notes, sure, that did a really nice job. I'm sure there are a billion. There are two that we particularly liked. But
sure. Well, anybody who wants to rank for SEO content and demonstrate brilliance certainly took them to task.
That's right.
You know, what is interesting about that, and you and I have talked about this a fair amount, it's kind of one of our primary theses in the marketplace, which is that, you know, maybe Google is evil is a bit strong. But, I mean, Google is going to pursue their goals of dominance in kind of ad revenues,
right?
And right. And the best way for them to do that is to become a gatekeeper to content. And
right. That they may is not be evil, but they're certainly acting very much in the best interest of their shareholders, which isn't necessarily acting in the best interest of all their associated stakeholders, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is kind of interesting that, you know, their business model, of course, was originally built on access to content to serve ads, right?
Yep.
That's always the subtext. But there always seemed to be this partnership between content producers, and that is to say companies who wanted traffic, and Google, because there was this symbiotic relationship. And companies tried to get the algorithm to treat them nicely by creating great content, and Google rewarded them. And it seems like that compact has broken down. I think companies still pursue their goals, right, for better rankings, mostly, I think, out of a Pavlovian response.
And if I can say, most companies are still getting – the plurality, if not the majority of the traffic from Google,
particularly organic. And then when you add in paid, for those folks who are doing paid, it almost always kicks them into the majority of their traffic from those two.
Oh, yeah.
And though that, I completely you're exactly agree, right. completely yeah. agree with your premise that the social contract has sort of, you know, been run over by a truck lately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting when, you know, I spent earlier this year, I spent a lot of time talking to digital marketers about, you know, what's top of mind. And there was a lot of language around customer experience, personalization, mm-hmm. engagement, mm-hmm. and those sorts of things. And a lot of people struggled to kind of know why that was important to them, yeah, other than those are all sound like good things. And I think what they were sensing is actually something that we found as we looked at the data, and anybody can find this. We just happened to go looking for it. But, you know, coming back again to Google's business model, when you look at their revenue, it's something like 85, 87% ads, about 13% or so is, you know, the G Suite and everything else that they do.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, and it's a Q3. It's funny. I just pulled these numbers the other day.
Okay.
A Q3, it was only 84%.
So. Wow. They're making progress. Okay. So 84%.
Yeah.
And
but that's all of Alphabet's earnings. I mean, it's you know, everything they do. Is 13%, 16% rather.
Yeah. And by the way, just the finance geek in my, in me, it really is, I love what they call, they have advertising, they have this kind of other stuff, and then they have another third category, which they call other bets.
Right.
So that must be like pure R&D or whatever it is. But right. That kind of amuses me.
Well, and the other bets, if I recall correctly, and I shouldn't say a number here. I won't say a number here. I will say more of a directional. But the mm-hmm. other bets, if I recall correctly, were, you know, underwater completely. So advertising is 84% of their revenue, but it's really more like, it's more than that because some of the things they have, you know, don't make any money at all.
Sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, there's two other interesting data points that they present in the management discussion and analysis portion of their 10Q. And that is the percentage of the percentage growth in clicks and the percentage growth in essentially revenue or the rates that they charge for those clicks. And they do this for paid, and I think they do for organic as well, but the paid ones are really interesting.
Yeah.
Because of course that's where the revenue comes from. And what's fascinating is, and I think you've said this in the past, I certainly heard you say it, maybe not on the podcast, but you know, everybody who's going to be on the internet is kind of on the internet these days. Now there'll be growth, you know, certainly as some countries become, you know, kind of deeper penetration, but most of the growth has already occurred.
Right.
And you see that in the volume numbers that the Google presents for clicks on paid ads. It's beginning to level off. You know, the growth rate used to be 50, 60, some odd percent. Now it's 18. And by the way, it's been on that downward slope for a long time. And kind of the flip side is if your volume is decreasing and you have to demonstrate growth and you have no other products, well, you got to charge more. And when you look, I know it's fascinating how that math works. So Google has been doing just that. And what's interesting is you see now rates going in the other direction. And it looks like if you kind of follow the trends, fourth quarter, maybe the first quarter next year at latest, but the fourth quarter of this year, you will see rates increase for the first time ever for Google paid search. And so that's the big story that is kind of out there in the environment that people really haven't researched, but that they're going to feel. And it explains so much of what Google is doing, right? Whether it's pushing down organic results, keeping the clicks for themselves, all those things are in service of making sure that these revenue numbers, you know, continue to increase so they can please the street, so they can please their shareholders. But it's going to squeeze, the B2B marketers, the B2C marketers, any marketers, right, who are doing paid are going to get squeezed in the middle. And I think that's kind of wake up call for maybe these yield, engagement, customer experience things are more important because of that context.
Right. Well, and Steve, I'm going to put you on the spot because I know you talk about these numbers a lot, but can you talk for just a second, you know, about the numbers themselves in terms of, you know, how much traffic Google isn't sending, the decline we're seeing in organic, the, you know, things like that, the amount of no zero click searches, things like that.
Sure. Yeah, so Rand Fishkin, SparkToro is his new company. They publish these numbers in partnership with another company whose name escapes me right now. But these are Rand's numbers, but they're very credible in the market. They've survived a lot of scrutiny. And what they're doing is they're looking at basically trends, and Rand's, you know, game really is SEO, right? So they're looking for what are the meaningful trends in that top of funnel acquisition space.
Yep.
And, you know, his big concern is, you know, he was one of the early ones to say, hey, wait a minute, like Google is the only search engine. And I know Bing and a bunch of others are going to take, you know, umbrage to that statement, I guess is the best way to put it. But, when you look at the data, the top four Google properties, it's Google search, image search, YouTube, and another one I'm forgetting, Instagram maybe?
No. Google search. I should know this off the top
What's
of my head.
What's the fourth one?
Google
search, image search, YouTube, and... All right. So we'll look it up and we'll put it in the show notes.
Exactly right. We'll fix this in the editing.
That's right. But when you look at those four things, it's all of search.
Right,
and then he breaks down the little sliver that's not into more slivers, and then the little sliver that's not into more. And when you look at things like social search, Facebook, Twitter, it's zero. When you look at any other search engine, it's essentially zero.
Right.
And so again, very reliable numbers. And he was the first one to call out Google is the game. And if Google is the game, well, let's really look at, well, how is that game evolving for marketers? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very interesting. And they break this out. And by the way, all this data that Rand puts out is free. He publishes every presentation he ever does. So you can Google him. We'll try to find the most recent one and put those in the show notes as well. But he breaks this out by desktop and mobile. So there's all sorts of different cuts of this data. But when you look at it, organic search clicks are declining.
Right.
And so the big question is, well, wait a minute. Why? Why would clicks in organic be declining? Maybe it's because Google puts more ads at the top. And that's certainly been true, right? Ads used to be tiny, and then there were more of them, and now they're bigger. Okay. So organic gets pushed down by that, and that makes Google's revenue opportunities greater. But the other way I think Google continues to own and dominate the space is that any keyword that's even remotely common is now going to have all sorts of, and we see this, right? You do a search on something and you see all sorts of stuff. You see a little sidebar box off to the right. That, you know, is a Wikipedia entry, and then you see an answer box, and then you see other questions, and there's all sorts of different content elements that Google is putting on the search engine results page. And their intent there is certainly to answer questions for the person who's searching. Good for them. They get a quick answer. But what it does very often is it robs the content owner, the person who provided that content, with the click-through to their website.
Right.
And so if you want to know why overall organic search clicks are down 20%, that's why. And so Google is keeping the clicks, and it's stunning the percentage that they're keeping. They're keeping, there's more recent data than this, but the June data was like 49%. And when you split that to mobile is significantly higher than that. Yeah. So desktop's a little better than the 50% or the 49%, but mobile, nobody's clicking on mobile.
Well, the number that I always throw out there is the fact that 100% of the growth, actually greater than 100% of all the growth in search volume, is occurring on mobile.
Mm-hmm.
Desktop search peaked in terms of search volumes in 2014 and has been in decline for the last 5 years.
Right.
Has held stable or declined for each of the last 5 years. So, Yeah. So literally mobile, even if it's only a, you know, for a lot of our B2B clients and things like that, mobile is still relatively small. You know, it's 20%, but it has grown from, you know, 0% 2 years ago, right? So sure. The growth curve is astonishing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, given that reality, right? So now we're in a reality where we know Google's got to grow the revenue. They only have one product. They're taking active measures to keep organic on their site. They're taking active measures to make ads more visible. And marketers are faced with, at some point, it's going to be more expensive, right? Rates are going to increase. You know, what's the response, right? And that's kind of the question we hear is, all right, well, Steve, thanks for, you know, borrowing Rand's alarm bell and ringing it, but you know what's left for us to do? How do we respond? And you know, I think some of it, and this is going to sound a little trite, is well, you got to keep doing all that stuff you've done so far really well. You got to keep doing SEO really well, and you have to probably keep buying what you've been buying, if for no other reason that at this point Google's essentially a monopoly, and until they're not. You're going to want that, as you said earlier, 50, 60, 70% of your traffic is coming from there. You're going to want to continue to get that. But I think, and by the way, there are some other things you and I have chatted about this that you could do defensively, which is, you know, focus on your long tail, because there you're likely not going to be competing with ads. So your long tail, like less common keywords, right? You're not going to be competing with ads.
Well, you're not going to be competing with ads for now anyway, right?
Well, at least for now. And also you're likely not going to be competing with all those boxes that appear that Google provides,
right?
So you see those less frequently in the long tail. So I think, you know, that's part of the game, but you definitely have to do everything you've always done well, and you have to perhaps get some leverage in the long tail where you have some opportunity. But of course, your problem with the long tail is you don't have a lot of content that's really focused on journey progression and all that stuff in long tail, because they're your less popular, topics, I guess is the best way to think about it. So,
well, they're going to be lower volume. They're going to be a lot of things. I mean, we obviously, when we do client engagements, we talk a lot about long tail, and you try to make up with, you know, volume of keywords, what you lose in volume of traffic for any given, you know, keyword or group of keywords, but it's work, right? It's literal work. It's not an easy thing.
And it's a lot of diminishing returns there in the long tail. Of course, you know, you could build your email list, right? So you could kind of, you know, not go to Google at all, but we all know how hard that is, right? You know, it's virtually impossible to get anybody to give you their information. That information ages out really quickly. And oh, by the way, if your organization or your if the subscriber's organization or they personally use Gmail, guess what? Oh, Google is shunting all those, you know, ads off to a separate tab, so they basically never see them. And nobody opens them, yada yada yada, right? So email is hard.
And not that we're saying people shouldn't do it. We're just saying.
Again, you got to do it. Right, it's work, though, right?
But it's
work. There's no easy answers here. And the other unsatisfying option is, you know, make sure you're a destination for your subjects, so that when people think about, like, I'd love it, right? If people, you know, the synonym for personalization was solo segment, right? And so they just typed our, you know, URL into whenever they thought about it. But it's not. And so that's a heavy lift as well.
Well, it's amazing. And this is going to be less true in B2B, but we've seen this a lot in B2C over the years. You look at the number of companies who sort of compete in that space who have invested heavily for the first time in years, who've amped up their spend on television and radio and outdoor and the like. You know, think about the fact that you're seeing television commercials for Amazon, you know, a lot these days. Sure. And that's very much what they're trying to do, is they're trying to be the destination that people think of. Obviously, if you're a B2B company, there are certainly companies where you can do that. But the avenues by which you're going to reach the right kind of folks, there aren't a ton of them, right? So that's hard in a different way. You should still do it if it's appropriate, but not the simplest thing in the world to do.
Yeah. So I guess the long story short of that is acquisition remains hard. Google is going to make part of that harder and maybe even more costly. And so that kind of brings me back to the market thesis that, you know, we've been grinding on for about a year now, which is yield is where it's at, right? That engagement, that progression,
right,
that positive customer experience that keeps whatever you do get improves the yield on that. So you you're getting at least bigger bang for the buck.
Yep.
Is kind of where the game is. And oh, by the way, that's not easy either. But you know, you look at some of the tools, and you know, I can make a shameless plug for our technology as well, but there are tools that are emerging that make it easier. And some of the concepts are certainly borrowed from the B2C worlds. Mm-hmm, things mm-hmm. like, you know, we do content recommendation. That is something that is going to help B2B marketers improve engagement. Certainly all the basic blocking and tackling of UI and UX and mm-hmm. making sure you really are good at that and you measure it and you evaluate it and you revise it are important. But it really is that engagement. And, you know, as you and I have talked about a lot, you know, personalization is the key. It's the expectation that people bring from their B2C lives. And that is the game. And that's where we're focused is how do you deliver these personalized experiences
mm-hmm.
in the context and headwind of GDPR and ITP and all those other things that are happening. And, right. you know, which is another blog post, one that we've probably already done, or podcast, but how do you deliver personalized experiences that create that engaging and interaction, that engaging context, so that people know, oh, this is how I get to my objective. And that, I think, again, it's almost like one of these obvious observations, but you know, yield is where I think the game is shifting. And that's why people have been talking about customer experience. Sometimes I don't think they knew why they were talking about it other than it was a cool buzzword. But I think the context for customer experience being really, really important is because the top of funnel is going to get harder.
Right.
And we see that in the data.
Right. So Steve, you know, you teed up this question nicely. You know, mm-hmm. how do you do that? How do you personalize, especially in, you know, well, let's stay away from the GDPR and ITP yeah. for the moment, but you know, just in terms of, you know, what are some steps people can do in addition to give us a call at Solo Segment?
Yeah, sure. You bet. 1-800 Solo Segment. No, don't dial that. Don't dial that. I have no idea what that is.
Like the old days of telling people to go to whitehouse.com. And if you don't know what that is, don't Google it.
Don't
please,
go there. Yes.
Please. Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Sure. So this has clearly gone off the rails. So, I was actually talking to someone today and we were talking almost about that exact question. So very prescient of you to tee that up. And, you know, I liken this to it's 20 years ago in India, right? And landline phone penetration is very low.
Yep.
As compared to kind of rest of world.
Yep.
And what you saw happen over the next 10 to 15 years was landline penetration did not increase.
Right.
Right. What went crazy was cell phones, right? Because far easier to put up a tower with an antenna on it, right? It makes a lot of sense. And it's this leapfrog notion.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so especially in B2B, and it varies by industry segment, almost by company to company, right? But the B2B generally is less mature. B2B companies are mm-hmm, generally mm-hmm. less mature than B2C companies with regards to personalization technology.
Right, right.
And the question I was asked was, what should our next step be? Should I go look at how to bring in, you know, personal information and do some third-party data? And I said, well, why would you adopt the technology that was developed 20 years ago, not kind of modern technology. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. B relies upon data that not only do regulators squeamish about, but it's actually not the regulators who are actually squeamish. The reason the regulators are squeamish is because the human beings are squeamish, right? So why would you build, you know, kind of your business on landline telephones, right?
Right. Yeah.
Why don't you take a step forward and do something a little more interesting, right? To use the data you may already be able to gather, things about your content, things about your visitor journeys, things about mm-hmm. your, you know, kind of searcher intent. And I mean, there's a lot of data that is available within your firewall, right? Within the your website. And so can you use advanced technologies to discern what a customer, what a visitor, that first click they make onto your website, what they're trying to achieve, and nudge them along through a journey towards a task, towards their objective, towards the thing that's going to add value for your company. And so this is kind of the shameless plug, you know, portion of the podcast where, you know, that's kind of been from a product perspective where we've been at is right. How do you do this so that you can kind of leapfrog all those technologies that require third-party data or really robust first-party data or whatever? And how do you then kind of leapfrog those in a way that allows you to use latest technology to kind of serve the same ends, make it easier for you, make it easier for your customer, and deliver that personalized experience? And so that's where we've been focused. And I think that's where companies need, and we're not the only vendor who does this. So there are a lot of vendors out there who are thinking about this. And that's where I think people need to think. So it's not let me figure out what, you know, some, you know, I'm not going to go take a look at what, say, Brooks Brothers is using for their personalization technology and then try to apply it to, you know, pick some large chemical company, right? Yep. Leapfrog that, right? Leapfrog the B2C model and look for what is the model that makes sense in your context. And that's especially important because the characteristics of a B2B context are often very different from the B2C one. Not only that the business models are different, et cetera, but B2C personalization is easy.
Yeah.
And it's easy because especially the content data is so well structured that, you know, hey, I know that Tim likes, you know, green jackets in this size, yep. et cetera. So therefore I can go to my catalog and deliver him recommendations for green jackets in this, you know, so that's easy. But
they tend to sell products at much larger scale. I mean, there are absolutely exceptions. You know, if you are in the, you know, I'm going to make a specific example, you know, you make gears or motors for, you know, conveyor belts or for, you know, plants or logistics or things like that. Well, sure, you make a lot of those. But I mean, generally speaking, most large B2B firms, the volumes of products they sell just by nature of what they are and the cost and the number of companies who need them, it's going to be a smaller data set, right?
Yeah, you bet. And the thing you're recommending is not a product, right? Because as you said, you're not saying, well, buy the jet engine, right?
Correct.
You're saying is, here's the white paper, right? So you're selling a piece of content, right? Because B2B conversions is a process of lots of different types of conversions. And when you're selling, when you're kind of selling and recommending the content, you're recommending a big wad of unstructured data, right? So how do you know that that unstructured piece of data fits the context of the information that the person is seeking? And, you know, today you could hand code all your content, or you could use, say, natural language processing and machine learning to both discern the meaning and then label the content with a meaning, right? That's why I think B2B companies in particular with big gobs of unstructured data have to be thinking about leapfrog, because the technology from yesterday is not only going to be unappealing because of all the personal information ramifications, but I also don't think it serves the context of their visitors very well.
That's awesome. That's great. Well, and I mean, it's interesting. If I can add one thing to this, because I'm so glad to hear you say this, it's a thing that people forget in digital is the leapfrogging. And, you know, the India example is a great one. We used to talk about this, oh my gosh, 15 years ago with regard to, you know, when I first started doing digital stuff globally for my company, that probably 18 years ago, you know, we always talked about, when you talked about the internet, the US was in the current year. I'm just going to say 2002. And as you worked your way east, you know, towards Europe and then towards, you know, Asia and the like, it was like you were going back in time.
Now, interesting.
And when you talked about mobile, it was entirely flipped, right? Japan, Korea, places like that were really good at mobile. And as you worked your way west, you know, you got to the US, nobody was using mobile, right? But what happened in both cases is they leapfrogged the technologies. You know, you don't have to start where people started. You can start right where people are now.
Yes,
in fact, you look at companies who come in and disrupt, the reason they're able to disrupt is because they don't have that legacy baggage that they have to, you know, replace or things like that.
Yeah.
So it's really a great point. I'm so thrilled you brought that up.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And if we were to net this all out, right, you have a threat, right? You have a threat that your top of funnel, your acquisition is going to get harder and harder. The response is that you have to really focus on yield because of the monopolistic tendencies of the players in that space.
Yep. Yep.
And I think your point is exactly right. Start where the state of the technology is today. And, start with the state of technology that makes sense in the context of your visitors, especially if you're a B2B company, and not where kind of the product and the technology frameworks that kind of are, quite frankly, yesterday's news.
It's a great way to put a button on it, Steve.
Look at that.
Look at that. And we're right at time. Any last thoughts before I let you go?
Boy, if I have any more thoughts, I might bore the audience. So we'll call it there.
Fantastic. Well, as ever, great chatting with you. I'll look forward to doing it again in just a couple of days.
You betcha. Take care.
Search Chat is brought to you by Solo Segment. Solo Segment is a technology company focused on site search analytics and AI-driven content discovery to improve search results, increase customer satisfaction, and unlock revenue for your company. Solo Segment, make your search smarter. And learn more at solosegment.com. If you like what you've heard today, click on the subscribe links you can find at solosegment.com/podcast, on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts can be found. You can also find us on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/company/solosegment, on Facebook at facebook.com/solosegment, on Twitter using the Twitter handle @solosegment, or you can drop us an email at info@solosegment.com. Again, that's info@solosegment.com. For Search Chat, I'm Tim Peter. I hope you have a great rest of the week. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll look forward to chatting with you next time here on Search Chat. Until then, take care, everybody.